Hey, you. Yeah, you. Holiday Inn Express wants to let you in on a little secret. There's still time to get at least 20% off at holidayinnexpress.com during our annual sale. We'll even throw in free breakfast. Just kidding. Breakfast is always included in your stay at Holiday Inn Express. Book now and save at holidayinnexpress.com. Terms apply.
This is Bale Street, crime, finance, and everything in between. Hosted by Ira Gettleson, bail bondsman to the stars, and Danny Moses of The Big Short fame. This is Bale Street.
Welcome to Bale Street. I'm Danny Moses.
I'm Ira Gettleson.
We have the Bear Traps Report founder, former Lehman trader Larry McDonald on, who has gone on from the Lehman debacle to create a great name for himself. You had a great name before that.
Thank you.
Great name for yourself. And we had met shortly after that, I believe, when we launched Seawolf Capital, and I had always followed you. I knew who you were. And the funny thing is here, before we get in, and Ira remembers the Lehman days,
yes.
It was bad for a lot of our friends that worked there. But the craziest thing to me was how smart the people were that you worked with and were around you, and how I keep saying to myself, how could that have happened, and what was the chain of command? And so in your book that you wrote about Lehman, Colossal Failure of Common Sense, which was phenomenal, I think you autographed it for me. You kind of give the biography of what went on. But my first question is to you, and you talk about it in the book, what was going through your mind during that week leading up to the bankruptcy? So the bankruptcy was September 15th, but the shit was already hitting the fan
way before that,
the months leading up. So you talk about a mutiny a little bit. You talk about what went on. So I'd just love to get your mindset.
Well, it was 10 years ago this quarter, I mean, third, fourth quarter, and so we're at the 10-year anniversary. The one thing I tell my wife, we've sold about 650,000 copies now. The book's in 12 languages. And wow. Once a month, I tell her, if we, as a former Lehman trader, I said, if we sell 1 million books, we'll break even on our Lehman stock.
Ira sold some books.
Right? Yeah, I'm also an author.
The fixer.
I think I'm at 6 copies.
Exactly. Well, that was the worst part, because the advice I always gave people, even my friends that were Lehman, who you knew many of them, I would say, guys, sell your stock. You already work there. This was a year before, two years before.
I would say just sell.
You already make money by doing well there. Why do you need all your eggs? And some stock couldn't be sold, obviously. Some was put away in a 401k and all that. But I actually was just in the city recently having lunch with my mother, and Dick Fuld was sitting next to me.
Oh, no.
And it took everything I had. And I didn't want to interrupt him. Like, it's not, you know, leave him to his privacy. But I saw him, and I had this emotional thing came over me, like, you don't even deserve to eat out. You know, you shouldn't even, and he was in a corner, I won't say the name of the restaurant, actually I probably tweeted it, but he was in the back corner, and I think he was with his grandson or his son, I'm not sure.
Thank God you left him alone.
I left him alone, Mike, but I stirred up all these emotions, and I'm like, here we are 10 years later, you know, seeing that. So from that, you picked up the pieces and decided that you would basically, and by the way, before we get to that, your desk was making a ton of money shorting housing, correct?
That's the thing. At Lehman Brothers, you really kept your head down, you did your job, or you lost both. And there was a group of people at the bank that were really trying to stop the madness. We were short subprime. We made close to $2 billion on our desk as a team. But for every dollar we were making, they were losing about $8 upstairs.
But you didn't see nothing came out daily on a report, because that ledger didn't exist downstairs, right? It was on floor 31 or wherever he was.
The one thing in the summer of 2008 when I approached my co-author, Patrick Robinson. Patrick Robinson wrote Lone Survivor, with the Navy SEALs in Afghanistan.
Yep.
So I pitched him, in 2008, because when we realized in the summer that 36% of the net tangible equity of the bank, 36%, was in three commercial real estate investments. So that was that started to get around the trading floor in 2008, and I approached Patrick because Lone Survivor was a number one New York Times bestseller. Patrick, I pitched him on the book in the summer of 2008, and we were up on Cape Cod, and it was 4th of July, and a table of like 8 people, and I pitched him. I said, I have this story, I'm a Lehman trader, and the whole table laughed because Patrick was coming off such a successful book. That book, Lone Survivor, became a movie with Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah.
And so the table laughed, and Patrick said, Larry, I'm working on Shimon Peres's memoirs.
Right.
Come and talk to me in 2010. This is the summer of 2008. So I said, Patrick, you don't understand. If this bank goes down, It'll be bigger than Enron, WorldCom, Adelphia, right. and GM combined.
Right.
And he had a Chivas Regal on the rocks. He held it there for like 4 seconds. It felt like an hour. He put it down. He looked at everybody at the table. He said, Lawrence, if it goes down by the stroke of midnight this year, you have a deal.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's
little
how,
do you
that's
know, this will be a much more severe war than what he was covering, or the battle than he was covering. So I just have a thing. So you talked about Glass-Steagall being repealed as kind of, and Michael Lewis has talked about that also before, but it still takes, you know, not breaking the law, but it still takes using shareholder equity, and, you know, it's very brash to think that that's what caused it, but you still had to have the human that was effectively taking this thing to the leverage of the max. So fast forward, what's going on now with Dodd-Frank and things that are happening now, Volcker Rule kind of being pulled back, et cetera. What are your thoughts on that, having seen firsthand what can happen? So I'm sure you don't like regulation in the sense of Wall Street. Now, there's certain parts I do and I don't, but what are your thoughts now? This could happen potentially again.
Well, yeah, it's going to happen more on the corporate side. So right now, BBB rated corporate bonds, BBB rated, there's $2.5 trillion of them. So that's borderline junk. $2.5 trillion of bonds, borderline junk. In the previous cycle, that bucket was only $700-800 billion. So you've got $2.5 trillion of borderline junk. The entire junk market is only $1.2 trillion in size, right? So you've got companies like GE. This is where the next crisis is. But the good thing is, it won't be the problem with the Lehman situation was it was big dominoes going down, right? So if Lehman fell, it would knock, you know, Bear Stearns, right. AIG. Today it's going to be a bunch of smaller dominoes. So it'll be a crisis that unfolds in a different way, but just every decade, every crisis, there's another metamorphosis into another serpent, another beast.
Do you think the rating agencies again? I mean, you just said triple B. I mean, they may be triple C in reality in terms of where they truly are, with spreads keep widening in terms of how they measure it. So we don't know. There are a lot of Covenant loans out there. We've seen that. So here we go again, potentially, and you'll have the mom and pops get burned again with these ETFs, these fixed income ETFs, which you saw massive outflows, right?
Yep.
So we talked about on the show before how that could be the canary in the coal mine, these ETF products with duration mismatch on loans that take 20 to 22 days to settle that can be sold or bought in 10 seconds, right?
Yeah.
So that to me is potentially what, you know, you know, that's not cataclysmic in the sense of it doesn't spread like a AIG and a Lehman would, but it's still going to have a pretty big impact on people.
Yes.
And on companies' ability to fund themselves going forward, because spreads will blow out. So is that? I know you write about that in Bear Traps. It's obviously one of the issues. One of the things you talked about was politics, which is the reason I'm sitting here and not managing money anymore, is because it hasn't been a fundamental tape for 7 years. And as soon as that became clear, I know my skill set, and it's not this type of market, right? So when are fundamentals going to matter again, and when will politics stop mattering? Because you were early on that idea, and it takes a lot for Wall Street guys to admit that is what's going on, because everything they studied in life and models and so forth doesn't pertain to anything right now. So what is it going to take, a washout? I've always said it'll take a washout in the market to get us back to a bottom-up table.
Yeah, the passive, you nailed it with this passive asset management, which means that an LQD ETF or one of these passive ETFs, they're so big and so when a bond gets downgraded in a passive ETF, that ETF has to sell. Like, there's no investment committee that reviews the process and says, wait, you know, so if GE gets downgraded, there's just a massive flush. So all the passive ETFs have to sell at the same time. And then the other ETFs on the junk bond sides have to somehow absorb this new paper. So that it's going to be, like you said, a flush over, it won't be, I don't think it's going to be more like an 87 crash, but it could be like a 98 situation where you really wipe out a lot of gains in the market, and then there's a cleansing process where people can finally get back to real markets.
Right, because one of the issues is, in equity ETFs and also in fixed income ETFs, to your point, things get bought and sold. Well, you sell what you can when you get a redemption, right? So if there's a bond fund ETF and it comes out and $20 million is for sale, obviously. Most of it's computer-driven, but a lot of times it can't even sell the bottom of the barrel stuff. Like, the model knows it can't, so it sells the best stuff.
Yes.
So what we're seeing now is a bifurcation. So we've seen in FANG, obviously, there's five, six stocks that account for most of the returns and most of the market weighting in equity ETFs, you're starting to see a similar where the best bonds and high yield go tighter by nature, and the worst ones get wider by nature. So it's just, it's not a healthy portrayal of, or it's not an actual portrayal of what you're talking about as far as how many triple B bonds are out there right now. You know, you don't see it in the charts of the ETFs themselves. So there's a disconnect and a false sense of security, in my opinion, of, and I don't know if you agree with that.
But the big winner could be, so let's think of, like, instead of just, you know, focusing on a crisis, like, where's this capital going to go? So you're talking about the FANGs, you know, $3 trillion in the FANGs. $1 trillion of that is going to go somewhere, and it's going somewhere today. We've got NVIDIA down 40, 50% from the highs. As Jackie Gleason used to say, the only problem with losing 50% of your money is you need 100% to get it back.
Right.
And so this is NVIDIA. NVIDIA alone's wiped out a couple hundred, you know, maybe $100 billion. So that money is going to go from these big tech stocks, these FANGs, into the staples. And you look back to 1999, 2000, the consumer staples, which would be the XLP ETF, XLP. This is like, you know, major food producing companies, recession proof companies that pay dividends. And so what's going to happen is, because of what we're talking about in the credit markets with all of that junk paper and all that those triple B's, there's going to be a real thirst for the highest quality dividends within the S&P, because if you think about all the debt,
dogs of the Dow, basically.
Yes, because the rest of the S&P, the dividend quality is going to get crammed down. So there's going to, I think the staples, consumer staples, could be up 30% from here over the next 6 months. If you look back to 1999, 2000, in those first 6 months of 2000, staples were up 30% because the money came out of big tech.
Growth to value, basically.
Yeah, growth to value. That's right. Where the money's going to be made, that
right.
Shift.
And Ira, just to bring you in the mix here on this, you know, NVIDIA. Do you know why NVIDIA blew up?
Fill me in.
Well,
because you guys are so goddamn fucking smart.
No.
I lost you at hello.
No, I'm going to tell you because you're... Your little Bitcoin fantasy that you had?
We're talking about cryptocurrency, yes.
Okay, so NVIDIA was one of the chips that's used for the mining and so forth. And so obviously with Bitcoin dropping to, I hope you're out of it at this point.
I'm so in it.
Oh, God. God help us all. You can bail yourself out. But that's one of the reasons is that NVIDIA was seen as this darling, and it was a play for Bitcoin mining and Ethereum and all this
and
stuff.
And the CEO's comments on Thursday, Friday were just unbelievable. He said, we underestimated the shift away from Bitcoin mining, and they just didn't give any visibility to investors, which is shocking, right? So it's like you had this huge hole in the balance sheet, and you just kind of throw it out at the last minute.
Right. And then so you had also made a comment that you thought the Fed was playing politics or has been playing politics. I've never seen it that way. I've seen as the Fed is completely independent, other than not trying to disrupt things. They actually go out of the way, I think, to be non-political in certain ways. But you had made the comment before. So I'm curious, do you think the Fed, you know, expectations are they go next month, when this will air, probably be around that time period in December, and then there's two or three hikes probably for next year. You obviously are under the impression that they may be overshooting potentially. I don't know what your current thoughts are. And I'm in the belief that the yield curve is going to invert. So for those out there, I think the two will go over the 10 in terms of yield.
Me too.
And I'm not saying that signals a recession, but it's not what causes a recession. It's what tells you that the market's telling you they're going to hide in the 10-year yields because they grow. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that because it's very topical right now.
So here's really good. The beast in the market, that serpent in the market, and we saw this in 2015 and 16, is what happens is the Fed tells the world the economy's strong. We're the only major economy in the world that's really hiking at an aggressive pace. So the U.S. dollar has ripped higher. And what has that done? It's crushed emerging markets, crushed Germany, crushed China. And Germany does a lot of business with emerging markets. And so that the global growth in the economy has come down so fast that now that's feeding back to the United States, and now and lo and behold, oil's down in a 25% from the highs in like 4 weeks, which is crazy.
That's a crap. I mean,
that's literally 25% in 4 weeks in the major asset.
Yeah.
And think of what that does to U.S. corporate bonds. So the recession risk in the United States, because of the credit markets, has just gone up by like 20%. And so here, once again, the beast in the market, the Fed, like, okay, Mr. Tough Guy, we're going to hike, like you said, four more times between now and next year. That's on the policy path. Yeah. If they stay on that policy path, we will crash, like 87 crash. So the beast in the market is going to break the Fed over its knee, and the Fed's going to do in December a one and done, just the way. Now get back to politics. Take us back to 2015. the market was, in that summer of 2015, because of the China devaluation, was going down about 15-20%. And just like today, in March of 2016, Janet Yellen, they had promised us, for 2015 and 2016, the Fed promised us 8 rate hikes, 8 of them. Okay, and before the Trump election, they only hiked once,
But they were anticipating more growth than there actually was occurring. Yeah. It was being shown, but a lot of that data gets skewed. You can't, you know, it's not real time; it's backward looking. But they did move the goalpost. I mean, it really was Bernanke with the QE policies,
yes,
and so forth that saved. I'm sure you wish he had come in September 12th instead of, you know, post the fact that he could have saved Lehman. But it's really, I just don't see it as political. I see them as not being correct all the time. That's for sure. They're going to overshoot here. There is no doubt. But I was just curious to get your thoughts. So if a guy like Ira was looking to put money to work right now in the market,
where would I put it?
Where would he go? To Staples and to...
Emerging markets are like literally been through a bear market. So there are certain emerging markets that have massively underperformed the United States. Brazil, with a new government there that's very market friendly. That's a good spot. So that's Brazil. I think it's the EWZ. And then you have China. Now, China equities, the FXI, you're talking about, they're in a bear market as well. So what's happened is the emerging markets have been through the ringer. In the United States, the best place to be, like I said, consumer staples, telecom, areas that are more recession-proof with better dividends. But I think that, you know, those are the spots that you want to look at.
Do you think gold? Gold seems to me is a great long here. I haven't read your comment. It just seems like it's a great risk reward. It may not do anything. I realize it's not a yielding product, but still, it just feels like if you happen to get inflation, which who knows, but or QE comes back or they stop unwinding, that's gold would go berserk.
I forgot to mention gold. So we have a position in gold and silver now. Okay. We're losing money on the silver. We got in too early. Just got into gold. But here's why.
Don't sell Blake's jewelry yet, Ira. Hang on to it. Sorry.
To your point, when the Fed backs away, you look to 2016. Once again, 2015-16, they promised us 8 rate hikes, and they only delivered 2. When they backed away in that March, gold was up 50%. So to your point, when the Fed backs away from rate hikes and that policy path, gold miners were up 50%. Gold was probably up about 30, and silver as well. And so if we go into that situation like 2011, where they really start to back away and go potentially toward back to increasing the balance sheet, that's when silver, you remember, it's from 2010 to 2011, silver was up 75%.
Right. And that's not an industrial commodity as much as like palladium or something else that's used. Because the housing market, obviously, copper, for instance, is more of a economically sensitive metal than anything. It's not used for store of value. It's used to actually for, you know, industrial. So, yeah, and housing, as you've noted, has been rolling over for... And that's, I mean, from a consumer perspective, there's nothing that's more tangible to a consumer than the value of their home, or if they've just overpaid, or if they're looking to buy one and their monthly rate, right? So housing is probably being underappreciated right now as somewhat a canary.
Think about Connecticut. I have a friend with a home in Greenwich and another friend in Norwalk.
I'm in Connecticut. I'm in Westport.
But yeah, they're down 50% from 10 to so a $3 million house 10 years ago is worth 1.5. Think about it. They were hit with Dodd-Frank, right? So that hurt a lot of the sales and trading people on Wall Street. Then they get hit with GE left the area, right? So that's a massive amount of income. And then they get hit with this salt, salt and
property
the
taxes.
Salt. The one thing the Trump administration totally misjudged is the impact of salt on those voters. So you got states like California, a district in Orange County that's been Republican for, I think, 50 years, just went blue. And that's because of this salt. I mean, it's just really done a damage to the American homeowner. I like the home builders here because the sector, because stocks like Masco, Mohawk Industries, the largest carpet maker in the United States, these stocks are trading like 6 times earnings, and they're down 60%, 60% the last 6 months.
Yeah. Also, by the way, you failed to mention how bad the trains have gotten worse. So since
the trains are worse now.
Since those 2 bad accidents in the last 5 years, they've slowed the trains down. You cannot get from, by the way, if anyone wants to buy my house in Westport, just give me a call. But these trains take an hour and 8 minutes, you know, hour and 9 minutes. So it changes the dynamic of that as well. So, I moved from Westchester, where Ira is,
Yes.
All right, your home's doing fine. Don't worry.
I think I'm maintaining over there. Yeah, I really do. So?
Yeah, I like Westchester.
Okay. Yeah, that's nice. I mean, it's close to the city. It's nice. But, like, you know, it's not going to be pretty. And you're right. It's not coming back either. And if it comes back, let me say this. If rates come back in a lot, something bad has happened. So if mortgage rates peel back in, what happened? Right, Larry? I mean, what would have caused that? Obviously, a massive sell in the equity markets.
Yeah.
I believe. A flight to quality. Yeah, maybe it buoys, but this is Wall Street area, to your point. This is the Wall Street area. So, yeah, that's one of those things that, you know, certainly going to keep an eye on. So, bear traps report now. I looked. There's like five different ways to purchase it now. It was just one way, five different ways. So, congrats on that. So,
yes.
you put this out weekly, right?
Yeah, weekly for the kind of market recap, but we do thought pieces twice a month. When something's pressing, we're looking at uranium now. We look for electric vehicles, nuclear power, and uranium, like trades that are multiple years in the works. But we try to do a special feature, and we're looking at oil now again. Oil's been decimated, and we want to try to figure out, okay, where's the oil call for the next 6 months?
So you mentioned electric vehicles. I mean, I don't know. I've never seen you... Comment on Tesla. Sorry, Ira.
There we go.
I mean, it's a combination of a lot of
things. Every podcast.
All right. You have any thoughts on Tesla here?
Well, it's remarkable that how well Tesla's performed versus the other fangs in the last month. Then you have pretty respectable investors like Mark Lazary came out and talked up the credit. That was like a month ago. So
He talked up the converts.
Yeah, I think
but that's converts are a different animal than.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm trying to say is if you're a Tesla equity investor, you have to watch the bonds. And the last couple of months, the bonds have actually been performing better than they were, say, in March, right?
Well, they're 86 cents, 87 cents. You know,
yeah, so they're up 3 points from the lows.
Right, but that's not indicative of a company with a $60 billion equity valuation with, you know,
it's
over $10 billion in debt. I just don't understand the disconnect of, I get it. I get market technicals. I get short interest. You're a smart guy. I know you don't do necessarily individual stock selection, but I believe that Tesla will be the name that's associated with this downturn, meaning it's lured a lot of retail investors in.
Yep.
It's a tangible product that's out there. It's going to blow up, and people are going to be left holding the bag. The SEC was late. The DOJ was late. And I believe the SEC didn't want to shut them down or didn't want to be too harsh because they knew they don't want to be blamed when it's inevitable, potentially, what's going to happen. That's the part. But I think it will be associated when people look back in 2018 or 19. Hey, what was that? Remember Tesla? Enron in 2000, but it was the bubble. Lehman in 2008. Again, it's contained and it's fine, but I don't know.
Here's the thing. As a rule of thumb, when you have a $52 billion equity market cap, and then you have a bond in the company, the company's corporate bond yields close to 8%. Those two things don't make sense.
Thank you.
They don't make sense. If you have an 8% yield on your bond, the equity market cap should be like $10 billion or less.
Okay, I'm with you.
So it's the warning sign is to watch the bonds. If those bonds break 80 cents, think of the equity destruction because you still have $52 billion of equity. So if you're an equity investor, watch those bonds. Those bonds break 80 cents. That equity is going to lose.
I knew you had it in you. Yeah. I knew that was deep in there on the Tesla thing. So that's great. Well, that's a great way to end. And of course, you have to rush out of here to go on CNBC. I'll come in on CNBC. You want every time the market's down. Hey, Larry, can you come on? Can you come on? How can they don't call you when the market's up 500, right? They call you when it's down 500. But it's good, very good for business. So go out and buy the Bear Traps report. And Larry, I can't thank you enough for coming
thanks.
On.
It's been a pleasure. I love the studio.
It's
I love the
studio.
Energy in here.
You look healthier and better than you did in 2008. That I can tell you.
Well,
getting younger,
so. I have a five-year-old and a three-year-old. 52 years old, and I'm still changing
diapers.
You're
going to be working. Yeah. You're gonna be, you better get out and buy them. You better turn to the Bull Traps report.
Yeah.
All right, Larry. Thanks so much for coming
in. Right. Okay, appreciate it.
That'll wrap it up for this episode of Bail Street. You can subscribe to our podcast at bailstreet.com. or any other service that you use to download podcasts. We'll see you next time on Bail Street. I'm Danny Moses.
I'm Ira Jettelson.
This phone drives me crazy.
Excuse me, I'm the Sprinter and from Sprint. Try my new iPhone XR with an amazing liquid retina display.
This is amazing. Mind if I snap a few photos? Look at that color. I love this display.
I'm gonna need that back.
back.
Switch to Sprint and get iPhone XR 64 gigabytes for $0 per month with an eligible trade-in and a Sprint Flex lease. Visit a Sprint store, Sprint.com/iPhone, or call 1-800-SPRINT-1.
Phone $0 per month for 18 months after $31.25 per month. Credit applied within 2 bills. If canceled early, remaining balance due. Excludes tax, subject to credit, $30 activation fee. Coverage and offer not everywhere. Restrictions apply.
Choosing an energy company raises many questions. Who can make my electricity and natural gas work smarter? Where can I find a company that's easy to do business with, who knows the market best, and has options to fit my needs? For millions of homes and businesses, there is one answer: Constellation. Decades of market intelligence and proven solutions from the trusted energy leader. Energy made efficient, simple, insightful, and flexible. That's what makes Constellation America's energy choice. Learn more at constellation.com/energy.